Thank you very much, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for allowing me to give this this class. I feel very grateful. So it's on CC Majjalila, chapter 6, text 148 to 151. The confidential meaning of the Vedas is not easily understood by common men. Therefore, that meaning is supplemented by the words of the Puranas. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the inhabitants of Rajabhumi. There is no limit to their fortune, because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. There's a short purport to this verse. This quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text 32, is spoken by Lord Brahma. And the next verse, the Vedic Apanipada mantra rejects material hands and legs, yet it states that the Lord goes very fast and accepts everything offered to him. So let's do this. This is the verse that has got the purport. We will recite this verse. Ate ataiva shruti kahe brahma saveshesha mukya chadi lakshanate manani vishesha.
Mataji, sorry.
Yes, Prabhu.
Could you please put the slideshow on, like share the screen?
Oh, is it not
we
on?
Can see. Yeah, we cannot see it yet. So you okay. Just push the share screen button.
There, I don't see a share screen button
On the Zoom, if you go to the Zoom.
And I don't see your Zoom anywhere. It's gone off my screen.
Okay.
So if you can't see mine, just share yours. Okay, hang on. I think my husband's going to help me.
Okay.
Just, you go to Zoom.
Zoom.
Sorry about this.
No problem, Mataji.
Okay, maybe they can just share their slide. I'll have mine for myself.
They won't see this.
It doesn't matter. They can just share your slide, Prabhu.
We will share our slideshow.
Yeah, because I don't know how to share it.
Yes, no problem. So here we go.
Okay, but now I've lost mine. Okay. Would you mind just taking yours down 1 second so I can see mine and I'll move mine off the screen?
Okay.
Okay, so sorry to
no problem.
I don't know how to move mine off the screen. Do you need to see yours throughout or just for the verse? I'm sorry about this.
For the verse, yeah. We'll just have the verse and then we can hand it over to you.
Okay, and then you can take yours down. Okay, yeah. Fantastic, because I can't see it otherwise.
Okay.
So the verse is, you can put yours up for the verse?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go. You see it now, yeah?
Yes.
You can go from here.
Atave shruti kahe brahma savishesha mukya chadi lakshanate manani vishesha. All these mantras confirm that the absolute truth is personal, but the Mayavadis, throwing away the direct meaning, interpret the absolute truth as impersonal. You can please keep yours up for the purport too. As mentioned above, the Shreshrata Upanishad 3.19 states, Apani pado javana grahita pashyacha chuksha sashrinocha karana saveti vejam nachatashyasti veta tam ahur agram purusham mahantam. This Vedic mantra clearly states purusham mahantam. The word purusha means person. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.12, Krishna confirms that this person is Krishna when he addresses Krishna as Purusham Shashvatam. You are the original person. Thus, the Purusham Mahantam mentioned in the verse from the Shvetashvatar Upanishad is Sri Krishna. His hands and legs are not mundane, but are completely transcendental. However, when he comes, fools take him to be an ordinary person. Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanum ashritam. One who has no Vedic knowledge, who has not studied the Vedas from a bona fide spiritual master, does not know Krishna. Therefore, he is a mudha. Such fools take Krishna to be an ordinary person, param bhavam ajanata. They do not actually know what Krishna is. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye. It is not possible to understand Krishna simply by studying the Vedas perfectly. One must have the mercy of a devotee, yat padam. One who is not favored by a devotee cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Arjuna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita 10:14. My Lord, it is very difficult to understand your personality. The less intelligent class of men cannot understand the Supreme Lord without being favored by his devotee. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita 4:34 contains another injunction. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master and surrender to him. Only then can one understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a person. So, which, fantastic. Can I get back my, sorry, fantastic. So, this is 151. So, I'll just read the verse again. All these mantras confirm that the absolute truth is personal. But the Mayavadis, throwing away the direct meaning, interpret the absolute truth as impersonal. So I'm just going to go through the purport very systematically. I'm going to read a section of the purport at a time and just clarify the meaning to the best of my ability. So Prabhupada starts by saying, as mentioned above, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3:19 states, Apani Pado Javano Grahita Pasya Chachuksha Sashrinocha Karna Saveti Vejam Nachatasya Sidveta Tam Aho Agyam Purusham Mahantam. So in the previous text of text 150, I forget the name of the author of the CC, but anyway, the previous text says Apani Pata Shruti Varje Prakrita Pani Charana. So the previous verse is referring to this Shreshvatara Upanishad verse. Prabhupada is saying that verse that I just mentioned, that was just mentioned previously, is coming from the Shreshvatara Upanishad. So now we know its source, where it's coming from. So I'll carry on. Then Prabhupada says about this verse, he says, this Vedic mantra clearly states Purusham Mahantam. The word Purusha means person. So this is again referring to the Shreshvatara Upanishad verse. It says, Tam Aho Argyam Purusham Mahantam. So Prabhupada is telling us this word Purusha in the Shreshvatara Upanishad verse literally means a person. So let's carry on. Then Prabhupada writes in his purport to 151, in Bhagavad Gita 10:12, Arjuna confirms that this person is Krishna when he addresses Krishna as Purusham Shashvatam. You are the original person. Thus, the Purusham Mahantam mentioned in the verse from the Shreshvatara Upanishad is Sri Krishna. So I just pause here a little bit. We've heard that even though the meaning of the verses is absolutely clear, that the Supreme is a person, the Mayavadis still misinterpret that the Absolute is impersonal. Now, Prabhupada is very clearly taking us through the logic. The CC cites the Shreshvatara Upanishad verse, where the Absolute is referred to as Purusham Mahantam. And Prabhupada has told us that Purusham means person, that this same term was used by Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita 10:12 to refer to Krishna as the original person. So if we put the Shveshvatara Upanishad verse together with the Bhagavad Gita verse, we can understand the Supreme is Krishna. So I don't know if any of you can remember the 10-12 verse of Bhagavad Gita, but it goes like this. Param Arjuna Uvacha, Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adidevam Ajam Vibhum. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the transcendental original person, the unborn, the greatest. So Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. Prabhupada is referring to that in his purport. So carrying on with Prabhupada's purport to 151, Prabhupada writes, his hands and legs are not mundane, but are completely transcendental. So I just want to pause a little bit on this point Prabhupada makes. What does he mean? What does it mean that his hands and legs are not mundane, but are completely transcendental? So there is a verse from, well, there's not a verse, but there's a passage from the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 23, that gives us a very clear understanding of what it means that the Lord's hands and legs are not mundane, but transcendental. So I'm going to read to you a section from the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 23. In the Mahavaraha Purana, it is confirmed that the transcendental bodies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his expansions are all existing eternally. Such bodies are never material. They are completely spiritual and full of knowledge. They are reservoirs of all transcendental qualities. In the Vishnu Yamana Tantra, there is a statement that because the personality of Godhead and his expanded bodies are always full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity, they're always free from the 18 kinds of material contaminations, illusion, fatigue, errors, roughness, material lust, restlessness, pride, envy, violence, disgrace, exhaustion, untruth, anger, hankering, dependence, desire to lord it over the universe, seeing duality and cheating. So this is really unpacking in the Nectar of Devotion what it means that the Lord's body is not material, but it's purely transcendental. It means that Krishna doesn't have any of these contaminations. You know, he doesn't have friends and enemies. He doesn't have lust. He doesn't have hatred. So when he sides with the Pandavas against the Kauravas, it's not that he hates the Kauravas and loves the Pandavas. He loves both of them. He's acting for the good of all of us, whether he elevates a person or he puts someone down, whether we suffer or we are enjoying. At the hands of Krishna, whatever the Lord does is good, is all auspicious, because he is not subject to error, he's not subject to illusion, he's not subject to the dualities of desire, of hate and love, he doesn't cheat us. So everything Krishna does is good. This is the real kind of import of understanding that he is completely transcendental. So let's move on with Prabhupada's purport to 151. The next point he makes is, however, when he comes, fools take him to be an ordinary person. Avajinanti mam mudha manushim tanum ashritam. One who has no Vedic knowledge, who has not studied the Vedas from a bona fide spiritual master, does not know Krishna. Therefore, he is a mudha. Such fools take Krishna to be an ordinary person. Param bhavam ajanato. So, you know, the point I was making previously, foolish people think that when Krishna comes and his enacting his pastimes, he's feeling lusty for the gopis, or he's feeling, you know, because Kunti is his auntie, for that reason he sides with the Pandavas, and that he's taken a dislike to Duryodhan. No, he's not like us. He, Prabhupada cites 9:11. If you know 9:11, maybe you can just connect with it internally. But this is the verse. Avajananti mam utha manushim tanum ashritam parambhavam ajanato mama bhuta maheshvaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. Krishna is impartial. He's equal to all. This is his transcendental nature. He never makes mistakes. But fools don't understand this, and they think that he's like one of us, partial, subject to illusion, making mistakes, cheating, but he's not. So the next thing that Prabhupada says in his purport to 151 is, they do not actually know what is Krishna. So what is Krishna? That's the question I would like to raise. What is Krishna? What is it that they don't know? So there is the verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, Text 63, where what is Krishna is very clearly explained. Sri Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatva Mam Shantim Richati. A person attains peace by understanding me to be the well-wishing friend of all living beings. Lord Krishna and his pure devotees work together to rescue the fallen souls from the ocean of illusion. Krishna, what is Krishna? Krishna is the well-wishing friend of all living beings. So whether we're in an unhappy state of a condition of life or a happy condition of life, we're whatever is happening under the auspices of our well-wishing friend. What is Krishna trying to do? He's trying to bring us to our senses, help us to realize that I'm not an independent controller and enjoyer in this world, that I need to take his shelter. I need to take his guidance, his direction. Through Shastra, I need to be guided by him in my life. And by doing this, we will become happy. And if we don't do this, this is why we sometimes find ourselves in very difficult situations of life. But those difficulties are also intended by our well-wishing friend to bring us to the point of realizing our complete dependence on him, that we must take his guidance if we want to succeed in life. This is Krishna. Whatever he's doing with full knowledge, without any error, and as our well-wishing friend for the purpose of bringing us out of this ocean of illusion. So let's carry on with Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada then says, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye. So here he's citing Bhagavad Gita 7.3. The whole verse 7.3 reads like this. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschit mam veti tatvataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So this is what, and the section Prabhupada cites in his purport simply means this. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. So he cites that section of 7.3 in his purport to 151. So I'm continuing to read now from Prabhupada's 151 purport. He writes, it is not possible to understand Krishna simply by studying the Vedas perfectly. One must have the mercy of a devotee, yat padam. Unless one is favored by a devotee, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Arjuna also confirms this in Bhagavad Gita 10:14. My Lord, it is very difficult to understand your personality. The less intelligent class of men cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead without being favored by his devotee. So 10 Prabhupada cited 10.14. The verse in Bhagavad Gita 10.14 reads like this. Sarvam etat ritam manye yan mam vadasi keshava nahi te bhagavan vyaktim vidhu deva nadanava. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. So therefore, just want to go back. I just want to say something about one must have the mercy of a devotee. Unless one is favored by a devotee, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's taken from Prabhupada's 151. The mercy of a devotee, like Krishna's mercy, is like sunshine. It's just shining for everyone. It's not that, oh, why can't I get the mercy? Why is he or she getting the mercy and I'm not? The Lord's mercy and the pure devotee's mercy are like sunshine. They're available for everyone. The only thing is, do we decide to stay in the shade, in the shadow, or will we step into the sunshine? So that's just one point. Later on in the class, we can talk about what is his mercy. So then Prabhupada writes in his purport to 151. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita 434 contains another injunction. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prishnena sevaya upadikshyanti te gyanam gyaninas tatva darshina. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master and surrender to him. Only then can one understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a person. So he says, therefore means, what is that? It's linking to what he's already said. Because it's not possible to understand Krishna just by a personal study, individual study of the Vedas, because we must get the favor of a pure devotee. For that reason, Bhagavad Gita says, go to approach a bona fide spiritual master and surrender to him. Only then can you understand Krishna. So that's, as far as I understand, Prabhupada's point. So I have a few questions I'd like to ask in order to help deepen my understanding and hopefully our understanding of the points Prabhupada has made. One is, what kind of a devotee's favor do we require? How do we get that favor? How can I tell if I've received the mercy of the devotee? So I just would like to pursue this. What kind of a devotee and how to get his favor? Because in his purport to 151, Prabhupada said, it's not possible to properly understand Krishna without the favor of the Lord's devotee. So I just would like to get greater clarity on this point. So in Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Text 22, purport, Prabhupada writes, one should take shelter of a pure devotee who has nothing to do with this material world, but is simply engaged in devotional service. By serving him only can one transcend the qualitative material condition. In this verse, it is recommended, Yogeshvarya Upasanaya, that one serve the lotus feet of the topmost yogi or the devotee. To serve the topmost devotee means to hear from him about the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the mouth of a pure devotee is to acquire a pious life. So a couple of things I'm getting from this extract from the Canto 4, Chapter 22, Text 22, purport, is that the kind of devotee I have to take shelter from is the ripe mango, not the green mango, not the sadhaka, but the siddhi, the topmost yogi, the perfected soul who has achieved, who has completely detached from the, has no material agenda, has developed love for Krishna. This is the devotee whose mercy I need in order to know Krishna. And Prabhupada cited in his purport that I have to surrender to such a devotee. He cited Tadvidi Pranipatena, that you have to approach such a devotee and surrender to him. So in this, and serve him. So in this extract, I get a much clearer idea of what it means to surrender or to serve the topmost devotee. Prabhupada says to serve the topmost devotee means to hear from him about the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's this hearing. So this is why, like the sunshine, Prabhupada has given us his transcendental purports. He's written so many books, so many volumes of his purports. He's like the sunshine. He's available for all of us if we choose to step into the sun and study those purports. We can begin to understand Krishna and perfect our lives. If we choose not to systematically go through his purports, then it's as if we're choosing to stay in the shadow. So let's move on. I just wanted to share with everyone a little exchange that happened between Prabhupada and a reporter in San Francisco in 75. The reporter said to Srila Prabhupada, "What will happen to the movement in the United States when you die?" And Prabhupada said, "I will never die. I shall live forever in my books, and you will utilize." So I just want to share this as an evidence for my light that, you know, Prabhupada's sunshine is there in his books, in his purports. He's there freely available for anyone who wants to take that mercy. It's just that we have to utilize, we have to go to those books and place ourselves in the sunshine. So Prabhupada's books can be quite difficult to understand. How can I be sure that I'm really getting Prabhupada's mercy, really understanding his messages properly? So there is a verse in an extract in the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 44, where Prabhupada says in the purport that simply to hear is not enough, simply to give oral reception is not enough. One has to understand. But if one's mind, of one's habits, of one's behavior are impure, even if one's mind is impure, one will not be able to understand. But he says, if somehow or other you can understand, then you'll see Krishna. Then you'll understand Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So for those who, like myself, I have to very honestly admit, my mind is not pure, my behavior is not pure, my habits are not pure. How can I be sure that I actually get Prabhupada's mercy? Many years ago, when I was pondering this question and I was listening to Prabhupada lectures, this extract came to me. This Prabhupada was speaking in his lecture, and I just heard this extract, which had a profound impact on me, and I'd like to share it with you. This is a lecture he was given in Los Angeles in 1976. So this was the extract that had a profound effect on me. "Generally, people cannot understand. But if one understands, he becomes liberated. If some way or another, it is not very difficult. Simply, we have to associate with devotees and discuss this literature. Then we will understand Krishna very easily. So by coming together and discussing Prabhupada's books, then we will properly understand Krishna." And how can I tell if my understanding is correct? Because if you put 10 devotees into a room and you ask them to explain a specific purport, what they understand Prabhupada to be saying, we'll probably get 10 different lights. And that's okay. We can have different lights. But how can we tell if any particular light is correct or if some are incorrect? So the key is this. The telltale pH Lipton test is this. Are we happy? If we're properly understanding this transcendental science, the effect is we will be experiencing happiness. It's not that everything in our life externally will, there'll be no troubles externally, but because we'll be seeing things through the eyes of the lens of Krishna, through the eyes of knowledge, we'll see everything as the mercy of the all good Lord, and we'll know correctly how to reciprocate with the all good Lord for his pleasure, for his happiness. And if he's pleased, we'll be happy. So this is the Lipton test. Am I understanding these books properly? Am I happy? If I'm not happy, that means I'm seeing through the eyes of duality. I'm not seeing Krishna's hand. I'm seeing friends and enemy. I'm seeing good or bad, like and dislike. And my life in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, is going to be, you know, like a, one of these, what you call it, funfair rides, up and down, mostly down in Kali Yuga, constantly in crises. So I want to share with you an extract to support the point I'm making from a lecture that Prabhupada gave in 1968 in Los Angeles. In this extract, he says that the Lipton test to know if you're understanding and executing properly is, are you happy? So he writes, if a person is actually executing devotional service, then he must be happy. If he's not happy, then he's not doing properly. So first thing is this, he might be doing something in the name of devotional service, then he has to rectify the process of his service, not to change, but to rectify the process. So we may be going through the motions of devotional service, but if we're not happy, Prabhupada is saying, you're not getting something right. You have to rectify. And the key thing that we're not getting right is the hearing, because devotional service starts with hearing. There is another evidence, which I didn't put onto my notes, but Prabhupada says that without properly hearing, one cannot correctly understand the other angas of bhakti. The hearing is key. The hearing is what puts us, you know, sets our directions in the proper direction, gives us the right understanding of the world and the right perspective. We can see Krishna's hand in our lives. And without hearing properly, we're going to start seeing in duality, friends and enemies, like and dislike, and we'll be constantly disturbed. So this is the key thing we have to rectify if we want to begin to see Krishna. And we have to hear from Srila Prabhupada, from his books. And last thing is, how do I improve my hearing? Prabhupada says in the purport of 336 that generally, he says, unless and until one is trained in the culture of good association, one cannot become good. So good association is the English for sadhu sangha. And sadhu sangha means to hear from a sadhu of Prabhupada's caliber, one who has the ripe mango, the topmost devotee. This is sadhu sangha. If we come together, you and I, but we don't help each other to associate with Prabhupada, if we just sit and we talk about our speculations, or we talk about gossip, or we talk about, you know, the football, or we talk about whatever else we talk about, that's not sadhu sangha, because we're sadhakas. But we come together and we discuss Prabhupada's teachings, that's sadhu sangha. And Prabhupada says that in order to really come to the mode of goodness where we're experiencing happiness, we have to be trained how to do sadhu sangha correctly. So just one last thing I'd like to share with you before I open it up for questions, that in our own lives, when we began becoming aware of Prabhupada's instructions about how to improve our hearing, after a course of 5 years of hearing and applying the things we were hearing, we felt a profound change in our own lives. From our lives were kind of like in crises to becoming very peaceful and happy and stable. So everything that we heard from Prabhupada about how to improve our hearing, we have shared on a website called improvingsangha.com. And we hope that the things that we heard that helped us to begin to come out of duality and see Krishna's hand more in our lives, and therefore become peaceful and happy, can also help others by hearing what Prabhupada said and applying those instructions in our lives. So thank you so much for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. And I will pause there.
Thank you so much, Mataji. This was a wonderful presentation, really scrutinizingly going through the whole verse, the purport. It's really nice to see how this can be done. And you really made it clear to us also the connection with the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, for example. Really pointing out how it's all connected. And So far, we don't have any questions. Maybe you could go on a little bit on the mercy aspect that you spoke about, how to get this mercy. But what is the actual mercy is to understand Krishna more, right? So how can we feel that in our lives? Is it just the happiness, or is it, how is it practically manifesting?
Well, as we begin to discuss Prabhupada's purports, at least I can only share with you, I'm not a sitter, I'm only a sadhaka, but so I can only speak from personal experience, that my husband and myself, we sit every morning, we have for many, many years. And we went from a situation where, and I don't know how many people watching are grihasthas, how many are brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, but for the community, you know, life in the mature world, and I'm sure life in the ashram, is not always easy. You have financial difficulties when you have children. There's so many decisions you have to make with regard to your children and your own relationships. You may have issues coming from your own background. We have so many things that mentally and financially and logistically in our lives we're struggling with. And for us, all those things were becoming quite overwhelming for me. I was not very coping very well. And until my husband began this program of sitting together and discussing Prabhupada's purports. And we started with one discussion a day. And initially, the discussions were quite fraught because we, like most of us, I mean, there are some people who've got very good discussion habits. There's three kinds of discussion that the Vedas talk about: Vada, Vitanda, and Jalpa. Only one of those can actually help us to become happy. That's Vada. Vada is a very non-confrontational, very harmonious way of both of us pulling together to come closer to truth. So it took us many years to learn the principles of Vada discussion. Prior to that, like most of us, we were discussing according to Vitanda and Jalpa. Vitanda and Jalpa are very debate orientated. They're very win-lose. You know, I'm right, you're wrong. Or sometimes I don't know what is right, but I just know you're wrong. And we're always clashing. I don't know how many of you can attest to that. There's sometimes shastric discussions amongst devotees. It's like the earth is round. Nope, the earth is flat, and you're a fool. You're a demon because you don't understand Bhagavatam. Or, you know, you're an idiot because you think the earth's flat. We become very, we begin to insult each other, and the discussion is not palatable. It's not enjoyable. So it took us some time. It took us a year, actually 5 years. We were listening to Prabhupada's lectures and whatever we heard, read in his letters or books. Sometimes we just get a clue how to improve our discussion and transform our discussions from this very argumentative mode to a very kind of harmonious mode of Vada discussions. And as we did that, we began to discuss every aspect of our life, all our decisions. We'd read the Bhagavatam, or we'd read the Gita. We do Bhagavatam in the morning, Gita in the evening. And then we discuss the points Prabhupada was saying. And then we'd ask, how does this apply to me? How can this help us in our lives? And whatever crises we were trying to deal with at the time, we would bring that crisis to our Gita or Bhagavatam discussion in the light of what we had just read and understood. And it would always help us get clarity how to move forward. And gradually, over a course of, you know, a few years, our life went from crisis to stable to progressive. And I have so much faith in this process now. I think the only problem is it takes persistence. You have to apply yourself to it. If you don't apply yourself to it, you're not going to get the result. If you apply yourself to daily, systematically, and learning how to do Vada discussions and doing it together with one other person, you only need one other person. You can have more if you like, but at least one person, our lives can become harmonious. And I would just like to actually, and I can see some questions now, but I'd just like to share a couple of things from the 11th canto, chapter 3, text 30. There, I forget the Sanskrit, but the English is that one has to learn how to associate with devotees to discuss the glories of the Lord. And by such discussion, one's loving friendships will develop. One's loving friendships will develop. One will achieve mutual happiness and satisfaction. And by thus encouraging one another, we will be able to give up our attachment to sense gratification, which is the root cause of all suffering. So we have to ask ourselves, are our loving relationships developing? In the Brahmachari ashram, in the Brahmacharini ashram, is there loving friendships developing between the Brahmacharis? Is there loving friendships developing between the Brahmacharinis? In our Grihastha ashrams, is there loving friendship developing between husband and wife, between parent and child? If there is not, we have to learn how to properly associate with each other. Because if we're associating correctly, this loving friendship must be developing. It's essential. We're all looking for love. If we don't get love by coming and associating correctly together, we'll start looking for it. We will start looking for something to satisfy that need in material energy. And our discussions should be very mutually satisfying and creating happiness. Is that happening when we come and discuss Shastra together? If not, we won't be able to give up our association, our attachment for the material energy, because we're pleasure seeking. You know, only when we start getting pleasure through correct sangha, properly learning how to associate together to discuss Krishna, only when we start getting pleasure from that will we be able to genuinely and authentically give up our attachment for Maya. Otherwise, we're just going to be faking it. Faking it till we make it. The only thing is, you don't make it by faking it. You've got to follow the correct process and actually cultivate your attachment, your pleasure from hearing and discussing Krishna's glories. Only then can we give up our attachment to Maya. I'll just pause there. I see some comments coming up, so I'm thinking to pause.
Thank you so much, Mataji. This is really, thank you for sharing these experiences. It's really like exciting actually and inspiring to hear it. And I think we all know this experience of having enlivening discussions with another person, another devotee about Shastras. And actually we long for that. So it's really important and crucial, like you say, to develop it more and make it the center of our loving relationships. That's very nice.
Thank you. Are you going to read those comments out or should I read them out?
Yeah, I could read them to you. Yes. So this is from Harika Mataji. She has a question. In Bhagavad Gita, it says a teacher should be abandoned when he commits an abominable act or loses his sense of discrimination. How do we restore our confidence for spiritual growth or build our spiritual strength when a good teacher commits such a mistake and loses good judgment? How do we develop our love for hearing from these teachers who once inspired us?
Thank you for a wonderful question, Harika Prabhu. I'd like to reflect it back to you. And maybe there's some way that you can let me know if I've understood your question correctly before I make a reply. So you're saying that we may have had spiritual teachers in our life, a spiritual master or a mentor or a senior devotee that we really looked up to, whom we used to love to hear from and who really helped us. And then they go and really make a big gaffe in their own personal lives, commit some sin, fall down, do something very foolish that breaks our faith in them. So once we break faith in one person who had, we felt deeply inspired by, how can we feel confident to develop faith in anyone else, or to feel the trust to hear from this person and be guided by these persons? If we see their fallibility, why should we trust them? If we see their fallibility, and how can we learn to trust and love them again once we've seen their fallibility? Have I understood your question correctly? I don't know if there's some way you can say yes or no. Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much, Harika. So generally what I would do when we do our own discussions, I'd ask if you have a light before I share my light, but that's going to be a little complicated here. So I will just share my light with you. In the Easy Journey to Other Planets, Prabhupada talks about different kinds of spiritual masters. He says, first of all, one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master, and then he gives the qualities of a bona fide spiritual master. He says he has nothing to do with this material world. He's learned in all the Vedas. He's self-realized, and he is perfectly engaged in his loving relationship with Krishna. He is a Prema Bhakta. He's a Swarup Siddhi devotee. This is the bona fide spiritual master, someone who's established his relationship with Krishna, and he's completely off the material bodily concept of life. That is the bona fide spiritual master. I don't mean to say this with disrespect for other sadhakas, but for other people acting in that role of guiding other devotees. But, you know, I think to assume that others and someone is of that caliber, just to make that assumption without really testing them, is a little foolhardy. We have that person in Srila Prabhupada, and he wanted us to continue associating with his books. We have that through him. Later on in the Easy Journey to Other Planets, in that same section, a few steps down, because he talks about the different steps that one has to go through. The first step is you have to approach this bona fide spiritual master. So we have that person, as far as my light is, in Prabhupada's purports. Prabhupada's present in his purports. A few lights down, he says, someone who's a little advanced, and he gives the qualifications they need to have. You need to read the Easy Journey yourself. If they've become steady in their own bhajan, if they're following, then they can become a mentor guru. They can take a few disciples and help them. That spiritual master who's a mentor, Prabhupada gives, he uses the word mentor, but he says he can give diksha, but he's like a student in the professor's class. He's like a senior student in the professor's class. So he's not the professor. He's not the monitor. He uses the word monitor. My husband just remembered, not mentor. Monitor guru. Prabhupada uses the phrase monitor guru in Easy Journey to Other Planets. So he says he's like a senior student in the professor's class. So Prabhupada is the professor, and then you have senior students. Now, the senior student, his job is to help us to associate with Prabhupada's purports. He's not the siddha, or she is not the siddha. He or she is helping us to associate with Srila Prabhupada's purports. Therefore, even if they make a mistake, because we're still sadhakas, as sadhakas, we can still make mistakes. We can, you know, we're still under the modes of nature. The point is, they've helped us to learn how to connect with Prabhupada's purports. It's Prabhupada's purports, which is the rope that's going to get us out of this material world. And I think this is also part of the GBC resolution. One of the resolutions I read, that all GBC members, I may have written down here somewhere. Let me see it. I've got it written down here. That all GBC, by taking full shelter of Srila Prabhupada, Shiksha Guru, in his Vani manifestation, which is his books, all teachers in ISKCON will be able to authentically convey Srila Prabhupada's real teaching. So even the GBC say that the role of any other teacher, initiating or Shiksha or whatever, is to help their disciples, to help the students in their care, to associate with the professor. You know, we have to become attached to hearing from the professor. We need help hearing from the professor. We need guidance and support and encouragement. But it's hearing from Prabhupada that's going to do it for us, to help us perfect our lives. That's my light. I don't know if that satisfied you.
Thank you very much, Mataji. This is really helping, I think. Yeah, she also says, thank you for your brilliant explanation. maybe we can go on to this one question that is also there. If you could please share your story, how you came to Krishna consciousness.
It's a little off topic of the CC. So on our Improving Our Sadhu Sangha website, we have some principles that we've taken from Prabhupada, where he talks about questions. And he was very, very adamant that questions should be on the topic of the purport. And he says, why are you asking that question? What difference will it make to your spiritual life? There's several, if you go to the Improving Our Sadhu Sangha, a devotee once asked him, have you met Lord Indra? Prabhupada said, why are you asking that question? What difference does it make to you? How will it help you in your spiritual life, whether I've met Indra or not? So for the whatever little time we have left, I think maybe if we talk about things that are on the topic I hope I haven't offended anyone by saying that.
Thank you. No, it makes a lot of sense, actually. One question came to my mind is about this process of hearing and discussing Srila Prabhupada's books. You were saying that actually you do it with your husband together. What do you think about groups of more than two people? Is it possible and how?
Absolutely, it's possible. But I think what is required, though, is training, because there's different mistakes we can make in a discussion, which can become, rather than creating loving friendships and mutual happiness and mutual satisfaction, we're very prone to speculation. We're very, very prone to speculation. Prabhupada says in 1715 Bhagavad Gita purport that in this discussion in the society of saintly people, you immediately cite Shastra to support what the point you're making. Not just saying, I heard or I read, let's bring the Shastra up. Let's everyone hear and read together and see if we understand it the same way, you know. So one needs training. So first of all, we don't speculate. That we keep to Prabhupada's point. We don't use Prabhupada's purport as a launch pad for our own journey into outer space and to our own fantasy, whatever, our own view of life. But we stick to Prabhupada's purport and what he's trying to teach us in that purport. And that we learn to ask correct questions. Questions that take us into the purport and not away. There is an evidence I have on the website where Prabhupada actually says this. One has to learn how to ask to go into the subject matter, not away from the subject matter. And also, I think we need training in how to, you know, everything about us, how to hear each other properly. There is such a thing. There's a phenomenon called pretend listening, where we're looking at someone when we're going like this and we're smiling and yeah, yeah, but we're not hearing a thing. We're thinking about what I'm going to cook for dinner or something. So in our discussions, we've followed Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada says, when you hear, you have to repeat. Otherwise you're not hearing. So whether we're hearing Prabhupada, we repeat in our own words, or when we're hearing each other, we always reflect back. What I heard you to say is this, which forces us to hear properly. So there's different things that I think in order for devotees to come together more than two, three, four, five, six, at some points that we had groups of 8, 9, 10, 15, but all the ladies, I'd train them to hear properly, to ask correct questions and would facilitate it. So I think if you do it correctly, it can be extremely enlivening. But if you don't learn to hear each other properly, if you don't hear to keep to Prabhupada's purport, if you speculate, it can become extremely frustrating to sit down and listen to somebody else, you know, speculate for 10 minutes without citing any Shastra. It can become very, very frustrating. So I think it depends on the training.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Yeah, it makes also a lot of sense. And I also had this experience, and I think we all have these experiences, of going off into other things. But at the same time, when you speak about speculation, how you said also that we need to kind of see how it applies in our life, right? And isn't there also some speculation involved, or how do we, sometimes it's also, there is a need for speculation, or am I getting it wrong?
Okay, there's two kinds of speculation, philosophical and mental. So philosophical means you take the statements of Shastra, and then you try to understand, how does that apply? Mental means we don't connect with Shastra at all. I think, in my opinion, you know, it could be like this, it could be like that. Mental speculation is condemned. But philosophical speculation is called anuman. So there's shabda and there's anuman. So anuman means you take the statements of Shastra and then you see, how can this be applied? How can this be reconciled with this? Or how can I reconcile my life with the statement of Shastra? You know, so that's a different kind of we use this word speculation, but there's good speculation and bad speculation.
Right, right. Okay, but then so how much is it mental speculation if we take into consideration like modern kind of approaches or situations in the world and try to combine it with see it with Shastra.
So would you repeat that one more time, Prabhu?
how is it mental speculation, or is it mental speculation if we have like modern day scenarios and ideas that we try to connect with Shastra?
Okay, so your question was, how is it mental speculation or philosophical speculation if we try to connect Shastra with our modern day ideas or situation? I thought those were your words. So let me see if I can put what I think is your question in my own words. So what I think you're saying is that, you know, the Shastra is written 5,000 years ago. They were living in a almost perfect society. Everyone was doing Varnashram. There were the sages, the Brahmins, the Vaishyas. And now today, everything's mixed up. And there's no way we can perfectly, our lives do not reflect that perfect division of society and that morality. And people around us are messed up. We're slightly messed up. How do we take, you know, isn't it speculation? Don't we have to do some speculation to take that, which was meant for a perfect time, to us now, which is, we're really messed up time? Did I understand you correctly, Prabhu? Okay, so that's application. When I say we have to learn to cite Shastra, I mean, when we're discussing the theory, so when we're discussing the theory and I say, I think Prabhupada means this, or we have our brilliant insights. Oh, from this statement, I can understand this is the truth. Okay, this is the theoretical truth. Is there any support for your statement in Shastra? Not in application, in Shastra. I'm just trying to think of an example to help you see what I'm. So, for example, if I say, you know, what Prabhupada means is we have to fake it till we make it. That's the philosophical truth. We have to fake it till you make it. Just grit your teeth until you make it. That's a philosophical truth. Okay. Now that's a philosophical truth. That's not application in my life. I'm taking this as an axiom that then I want to apply to my life. First, let me test if this axiom is supported by Shastra. Where in Shastra, what statements in Shastra can I use to support the axiom, fake it till you make it? And only when I can get support for that axiom, then I can start thinking in terms of how can I apply this to my life? When it comes to applying it to your life, that you may need to adjust according to what's manageable for you, what's realistic for you. We always do that. I'm not able to fully, like the perfect Vedic wife does all the cooking, all the cleaning, or that's just not realistic for me. I'm just not the perfect person, the perfect Vedic woman. So I may have to adjust that and say, okay, I'll do my best to serve my husband. I can do this to serve my husband. I can do that. I'm not able to get to the full thing. So that's adjustable. The application is adjustable according to what's realistic in our day and age. But what's not adjustable is the axiom. What is it that I'm trying to apply? That you have to test. Is it supported by Shastra? Because if we hold false axioms, we're going to apply to our lives things which are not true and which will create chaos in our lives. I don't know if that satisfied you or.
Yeah, I really got it. What I meant to say was about, so actually, if we do the big, a mistake at the beginning of the calculation, then the following things will be wrong as well. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've answered perfectly. So your discussion habits are very nice, Prabhu. You reflect things back. You hear properly. It's very good discussion habits you have.
I just tried to learn from you, Mataji. Yeah. Thank you.
I think you knew already.
Yeah, a little bit. I heard about this. We have more questions. Maybe we can have one or two more questions, if that's okay with you.
Yes, please. As long as you're okay, I'm okay.
Yeah. So there's one question. Is it okay to chant while hearing?
You mean chant japa? Extra rounds, fine. But, you know, I cannot preach to people about chanting perfectly, because I'm still struggling to try to improve my chanting. But at least let's get the axiom right. How well we apply it, that's another thing. The axiom is when we're chanting, we should be focusing on the holy name, prayerfully to the holy name, Krishna is a person. The whole purpose of our hearing, we were discussing this with my husband recently, the whole purpose of coming to hear from Prabhupada is to cultivate our faith that Krishna is his holy name. The holy name is Krishna. And that when we come into the darshan of the holy name, we're coming into the darshan of Krishna. And we come with prayerful supplication, really attentively. You know, I mean, we may sometimes do other things when we're chanting, but that's not what we should be aspiring for. What we're aspiring for, at least our prescribed rounds, is to chant in that prayerful mood when we're present with the holy name. That's the axiom. That's the principle. How well we can apply it in our lives, that's something else. That's for each of us to struggle to come closer to what we're aspiring for.
Thank you. Thank you. So we will go on with another question. That is, other than hearing, is there not any other way we can understand and realize Krishna, maybe seva or even reading?
Well, I don't think there's a difference between reading and hearing. Reading is just Prabhupada speaking and we're hearing him through the reading. But physical work, I don't have the quote on me, and it is my principle in life to always cite Shastra, but I can only tell you I have read, because I didn't have it as part of my preparation for this class, that all the other angas of bhakti, one cannot understand or execute properly without hearing. Hearing is the key one. And certainly I know, I can remember that in Canto 2, Chapter 1, Text 5 purport, Prabhupada says, in that purport, maybe I don't have my Bhagavatam nearby, that hearing and chanting includes hearing and discussing books like Gita and Bhagavatam. That's 2:30. Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 30, purport, Prabhupada says, when we speak about hearing and chanting, that doesn't just mean the holy names, but it also means hearing and discussing books like Gita and Bhagavatam. And in Canto 2, Chapter 1, Text 5, he says, this hearing and chanting is applicable for everyone, whoever he may be. And anyone who does this, that any other activity they do will become devotional service. And I have some quotes on our Improving Our Sadhusanga website, where he's giving a class one day at in the temple, and someone gets up to go out of the class, I think, I don't know, to do some service. Prabhupada says, where they are going? I said, and they said, oh, to do some service. He says, this is the problem. He says, everything depends on this hearing. He said, if you're not interested in this hearing, then this is a bad policy. You will lose everything. Even your deity worship will not become Shiv Vigraha. It will become Galagraha. Galagraha means a burden around your neck. He says, we have to work very hard, but our mission is to come and hear about Krishna. He says, not work so hard that we leave no time for hearing. If we're hearing properly, then our work becomes seva. If we're not hearing properly, even we may be living in the temple, Prabhupada says, it is just Karmi's life. I have these quotes on the website, improvingsangha.com. He said, if you're not hearing, he's talking to the temple devotees. He said, if you work so hard all day and night for organization, but you don't hear, it was just Karmi's life. This is a bad policy. It will just be Karmi's life. How Karmi? You can say, I'm a brahmachari or a brahmachrini living in the temple. How that Karmi life? Because our mentality will be that I want to get something from my work. I want to get, whether it's subtle or gross, I want to get recognition. I want to get the Mahaprasad. I want to get a higher position or a higher post. We will want something. Unless we're hearing, our mentality of being a fruitive worker cannot change. It's the hearing that will gradually change our mentality. You know, we're all pleasure seeking. And it's by hearing from Prabhupada that we will gradually become truly deep in our heart convinced that if I truly want pleasure, I have to give pleasure to Krishna. And what truly gives Krishna pleasure when we hear about him? There's that verse in the Padma Purana when Krishna says to Narada Muni, Naham tishtami vaikunte yoginam hirdaya shiva tat tat tishtami narada yatra gayanti mad bhakta. He says, O Narada, I'm not in Vaikuntha. nor am I in the hearts of the yogis. So where is Krishna? He says, I am wherever my devotees are discussing my glories. This is what gives Krishna pleasure. This is what gives Krishna pleasure. And this is why we do seva. You know, the seva has to come out of the hearing. And if the seva is actually seva and not karmic work, it will increase our attachment for hearing. We'll become more and more attached to hearing. So, you know, seva is very nice, but seva begins with hearing. And it's not that we did hearing once when we first joined and now we just leave that and do other things. No, daily. This is why Prabhupada gave us the ISKCON sandwich. Twice in the day, we're meant to be hearing. And this hearing is meant to be actually effective hearing. It's not just meant to be a ritual we go through. I ticked it off on my sadhana chart. Done my hearing, but we actually didn't learn anything. There's one quote I was going to cite at the beginning of this class and I decided it might not to. But it says, when he said, Bhagavatam and Gita class should be routine, but not just routine that we just tick it off. He said, we have to learn something. Learn something from what? From his purport. It should go deep in our hearts. It should inform our day. And at the end of the day, we should come together and do Bhagavad Gita and again inform our hearts. Otherwise, our own mentality is karmic. It's karmic mentality. We're sense enjoyers in this world. And that's a really hard mentality to kick. It's really hard to get over it if we don't daily hear. Sorry for my rants. It's a subject I'm really passionate about, you might have gathered.
We might have sensed that a little bit, Mataji, yes, but that's that's good. That's very nice. So thank you so much for this wonderful class. It was really inspiring to hear from you. And
thank you, Prabhu, for having me. And I apologize if I offended anyone in my exuberance to share.
We'll definitely increase our affinity for hearing and our intensity of hearing. So that's very, very nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.